Let's say you just bought a house. Bad news is, you're one step closer to becoming your parents. You'll proudly mow the lawn, ask if anybody noticed you mowed the lawn, tell people to stay off the lawn, compare it to your neighbor's lawn, and complain about having to mow the lawn again. Good news is, it's easy to bundle home and auto through Progressive and save on your car insurance, which, of course, will go right into the lawn. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company, affiliates, and other insurers. Discount not available in all states or situations.
And now, an ad from Dad.
All right, save money on car insurance when you bundle home and auto with Progressive.
Can I take these off?
All right.
What is this? This looks good.
Wow. That's well made.
Where did you get this? I'm talking to you, with the hair. Yeah, where did you get this? It's good stuff. That's solid. That's not veneer. That's solid stuff.
Progressive can't save you from becoming your parents, but we can save you money when you bundle home and auto. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company, affiliates, and other insurers. Discounts not available in all states or situations.
Hi, this is Goku from Dragon Ball Z, and you're listening to This Week We Reek.
Goku, it's not This Week We Reek. It's This Week in Geek.
I don't think so, King Kai. I'm pretty sure it's This Week We Reek. Have you ever smelled Mike or Steve?
Actually, I have, and, I think you're right.
You're listening to This Week We
This
Reek.
Week We Reek.
I mean, This Week in Geek with Mike the Birdman Dodd and Steve Snowball Sailor.
Did you grow up with the NES, PlayStation, Star Wars, cartoons, and 80s TV? Do you like to think you would win in a fight between Batman and the Master Chief? Comics, games, movies, music, and TV. They're gonna tell you everything you need. Superheroes or not, they got your back. They're gonna save the world of geeks. Comics, games, movies, music, and TV. They're gonna tell you everything you need. Superheroes or not, they got your back. They're gonna save the world.
Hey guys, what's going on? This is Mike the Birdman Dodd, and you are listening to This Week in Geeks Fan Service. Well, normally this show is hosted by David Double D Dennis, or perhaps Jordan Headphones Rutherford, but no, it's just me today, as the Birdman often flies solo, as it always seems to happen with really important interviews. Now, I've been kind of doing a little bit of research and kind of going through people that I want to talk to, and I decided I wanted to talk to Chuck Huber. Now, that's a name you may not be immediately familiar with, but his work you definitely are familiar with. I recognize him most as Android 17 from Dragon Ball Z and Garlic Jr. Now, I also found out he's done a lot of really other interesting other work, and today we're going to talk with Chuck about his career, what he's done, how he got here, and basically everything you needed to know except his social insurance number. So, Chuck, welcome to This Week in Geeks Fan Service. How are you doing tonight, my friend?
I'm doing great, Mike. Thanks for having me on This Week in Geek.
Absolutely. It has been quite the task to track you down. So what has been keeping you so busy of late before we jump into the real meat of this?
I've been doing some movie business, which is, most actors will tell you, that's where they really want to head anyway. And we had a little independent movie that won first place at the Houston International World Fest Theater Festival. And from that, we got a distribution deal, and it starts showing in theaters May 5th. It had a brief run in two or three theaters as sort of a test market, and then in May 5th, it blows up to 60 theaters all across Chicago and the Midwest and Indianapolis and Knoxville, Tennessee, I think. I'll probably put it all up on my website at some point, but yeah, so that's been kind of exciting. And from that, there's another couple movies that might be coming down that I might be able to make, which might be kind of fun.
Impressive stuff, man. Definitely, we're definitely going to go into that as the interview goes on. Find out, as I didn't know you were a filmmaker, much like we are here at This Week in Geek. So, Chuck, I guess where I want to begin this interview is at the beginning of the beginning, if you will. And as my co-host Steve Snowball Sellers is often fond of saying, very much inside the actor studio, though I don't know what the hell that means because I've never seen the show. So, So I'm going to ask you, where did you grow up, and what was your childhood like? Basically, did your childhood influence you getting into this wacky world of voiceovers and acting?
Well, that's a very interesting question. It all began, Mike, when a man and woman love each other very much. I was born in Chicago and moved to Texas when I was in seventh grade. And then I moved back to Chicago when I was going off to college. I went to DePaul University in Chicago and studied acting and quit school, actually, in my third year to start acting full-time. Started at the Steppenwolf Theater and the Goodman Theater and a bunch of really good theaters up there, and did some TV film stuff. I did an episode of America's Most Wanted where I played the killer in the reenactments, and it's always fun because the FBI, they brief you and they say, now you may be arrested once the show airs because people are confused and they don't know the difference between the actor in the reenactment and the real killer. And so they think, you know, I've seen that guy, he's an actor, I didn't realize he was a killer too. And so they'll, think you're the guy and have you arrested. But they say, they give you a number to call just in case that happens to get you out of it really quick. And then after that, I did there was a show, a TV show for a while of The Untouchables. And I did that. The one interesting thing is that show had Gimli the Dwarf before he was Gimli the Dwarf in it. So I got to act with one of the future Lord of the Rings stars. And I actually got to hit him with a rubber baseball bat, which was kind of fun. And then my child was getting older, and it was getting difficult to teach him how to ride the bike in the alley, because this was literally one day this happened. I was teaching him to ride the bike, and there was a homeless guy behind a dumpster, and I kept having to tell him to stop before he got to the homeless guy by the dumpster, because it made me nervous. Not because I thought the homeless guy was going to do anything, but if he ran into him or something, it's just complicated. So my wife and I decided to move back to Texas. And then in Texas, somebody told me about this company, Funimation, go figure, who was doing something called Japanese anime, whatever that was. I mean, I'd seen Akira, and, you know, I grew up with Star Blazers and G-Force. And so, I mean, I loved it. But I wasn't as into it as the rest of the world was, apparently, because I didn't know that there was anything else still going on. And I went in and I auditioned for Chris Sabat, and he was, you know, come on, sit down, yeah, let's talk here, audition. And I got the role of Garlic Jr., and then I got the role of Android 17 and Emperor Pilaf. And it's been, you know, uphill ever since.
So when you went into these interviews and auditions, basically, what did you expect going in? Basically, like, did you just go in cold knowing you were reading for a character, or did they give you any sort of background on the show? Basically, what were your feelings when you read the initial pitch of this idea? You were going to be either a killer robot or this annoying psycho midget guy.
Yeah, well, you know, Chris just kind of showed me a picture, and actually at the time, John Bergmeier was the engineer, soon to be replaced by Justin Cook, the engineer. But Chris kind of just showed me a picture of Garlic Jr. and said, do some voices for this guy, and gave me some script to read, and I did. And he's like, that's great, do this one. And so I think on that first Garlic Jr. saga, I played Garlic Jr. and I played one of his henchmen named Mustard, and I played like a couple other minor characters as well. But yeah, they just kind of let you go with it. I mean, especially Chris, he's such a great director. It's just like, you know, go for it, dude, whatever you want.
Wow. So now I understand that some voice actors don't get a chance to meet any of their other contemporaries when they're recording dialogue. Did you have a chance to work with Sean Schemmel during his time on the like kind of Dragon Ball stuff? Like, were like you guys ever in the booth playing off each other?
No, typically we're not in the booth together. The only time we get the chance to be in the booth together is on the DVD commentaries, and you usually can tell that we haven't been together because We end up having a lot of fun on those commentaries. I don't know if you've listened to any of them, but it's usually quite humorous. but that's usually the only time we get to act with each other, which is kind of the bummer about it, but it's also part of what makes the voice acting fun, because it's kind of on your timetable.
So going into the voice acting world and whatnot, what has it been like basically becoming like these iconic voices for characters that people know and love? And going along that same line, what is the character you've developed probably the most emotional attachment to as someone you can possibly relate to or maybe understand who they are at their core?
Definitely the one I understand the most is Hiro Nohara from Shin-Chan. And Hiro is most like me in real life. I mean, I have five children. He only has two. But because I have five, in the show, they sleep in what's called a family bed, which is everybody kind of sleeps together. The little one sleeps in bed with mom and dad. And we do that in my house. And there was one episode where Hiro woke up and Hima had peed on his head. And when I was recording that, I said, this is not cartoon comedy. This really happens. I woke up one night with someone who had peed on my head. I mean, it's just kind of the facts of life when you're going to be a parent and have a bunch of kids.
Wow. Never expected that answer, that's for sure. Wow. All right. So as you've gone through the roles throughout the years, basically, what is the one that you can say you're probably the most proud of being a part of, basically the one that you say on your resume, I was this guy? Like, what's the one that maybe stands out among all above all else?
Well, the one that the most fans still are curious about or want to talk to me about is Hiei from Yu Yu Hakusho. And it's either Hiei from Yu Yu Hakusho or Shao Tucker from Full Metal Alchemist, but people really hate Shao Tucker because they love Mina so much. But Hiei from Yu Yu Hakusho is the one that probably... the first convention I went to was for Hiei. I went to Otakon. And I'd never been to a convention. Nobody ever asked me for my autograph. I was just an actor doing my job in North Richmond Hills at Funimation. You know, it wasn't... I had no idea that anyone even cared. And then I went to a convention, and there was... you know, this gigantic line of people waiting to see me and get my autograph. And I was really kind of confused. I didn't know what was going on. I was like, well, they want to meet me. And then there were people dressed up and some, you know, dressed up as Hiei, and then little fangirls who would start shaking and crying because they were finally getting to meet me. And I felt kind of bad because I had no idea people were that interested in it. And then, you know, some of the fans wanted to start a fan club, Chuck's Donuts, they called it. I don't know why they call it the Donuts, because I'm the coffee, I guess. And I felt kind of obligated, because if there's that many people who want to, you know, support you, you know, you should participate with them. I figured it was the least I could do. But that's what kind of opened my eyes up to the whole anime world. And since then, getting to direct a little bit, sub-directing, and... mostly the writing of the anime has really made me understand how the fans can care so much about the shows. Because I had an experience when I was writing Bakano. I got to write the whole series by myself, so there were no other writers on it, so it really felt like my show. But we got to the end of the series, and I wrote the last words, and the show was over, and the credits rolled, and I had nothing left to write, and it was like 3 a.m, and suddenly I felt really sad, like all these friends of mine were gone, and they were never going to have new words to speak again. And that's what really, really helped me understand the whole mindset behind the anime fans,
so,
of which I am now one.
So speaking of anime fans, as you said, you had people that started a fan club and all these interactions with fans. What's the most memorable experience you've actually had with a fan on a one-on-one level, or perhaps in a group? Maybe they might have taken you out for dinner or drinks, or if someone ever given you something personal, there's the sign that really meant something to them. Or basically, what's the most personal interaction you've had with a fan?
There's so many. I mean, there are so many. Every convention usually has one or two where somebody is.
I can't believe it.
That Gerald is presenting the quarterly budget report with finger puppets?
Look, here comes a 1.7% decrease in fixed overhead. Hello, everybody.
No, I can't believe how easy it was to save hundreds of dollars on my car insurance with Geico.
Who are you? The projected increase in organic Q3 revenue. Hooray!
Believe it. Geico could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Geico presents yet another voicemail from your roommate.
Hi. So, about the kitchen. Turns out, when there's a grease fire, you're not supposed to throw water on it. Who would have known, right? Anyways, the fire department is here, and it's totally cool. Give me a call back when you get a chance.
The Geico Insurance Agency could help keep your personal property protected, like if danger is your roommate's middle name. Visit geico.com to see how easy it is to switch and save on renter's insurance.
You know, somebody is touched or somebody is, you know, they honestly come up to you and thank you. They say, you don't understand, Yu Yu Hakusho got me through high school. If it wasn't for Yu Yu Hakusho, I wouldn't have made it through high school. I would have quit. I've had people who really, you know, anime gave them the escape they needed from the pain of high school, because high school is a lot of pain, especially big public high schools. The only place I see the culture I see in big public high schools is when I used to work in prisons, teaching acting in prisons, because it's like the same culture. A giant public high school and a giant prison kind of foster the same mentality. So high schools can be very challenging, or at least they were when I was growing up. It was no fun to be sort of not in the in crowd in the high school. So when you have fans who are saying, you know, your show got me through high school, or your show helped me survive, you know, my family or whatever it is, you just kind of feel like, wow, okay, I have to remember that when I'm complaining about, you know, my throat hurting or being too tired or I can't record. And I did have, you know, I had a whole bunch of fans, the donuts, as they're called. They came to one of the conventions. There was like 15 of them, and we all went out to dinner, and that was really nice, just getting to hang out with them and some of their parents. I've done that a couple of times, which is, it's always fun.
Now, you mentioned you taught in prison. How did you get into teaching, or basically what is your educational background in that regard?
I started teaching. I've been teaching for a long time. If I count teaching in when I was a camp counselor at 15 or 16, I've been teaching for like 20, 21 years now. But I've always had a desire to teach and to do education. And I ended up a principal of a small Catholic elementary school because I was teaching drama there once a week. And one of their teachers quit, and I was in between gigs, and I said, well, I can substitute for a week or two. And they're like, we'll pay you $300 a week. And I was like, wow, I really need the money. So I took the job. And after teaching in the classroom for 2 weeks, I just kind of fell in love with it. And so I stayed on for that year. And then the next year, I was the assistant principal. And then halfway through the next year, the principal had to leave, and I became the principal by default. And then suddenly I was a principal of a school, and I was like, how did that happen?
Well, that's something I didn't quite expect to hear in that. That is absolutely fascinating. In fact, kind of going along those same lines, I understand you also have other interests outside of teaching. And I understood that you did a movie not too recently called The Fragility of Seconds. Can you explain to me what like that is?
So me and this guy, Matthew Tompkins, and another fella named Julio Cedillo, Matt and Julio were already friends. I met Matt when I was doing Hamlet at the Dallas Theater Center, and he said, hey, my buddy and I are going to Mexico, and we're gonna take a camera, and we might make a movie. And I said, I'm in. And we hopped in with a bunch of camera gear and an idea for a script. And the 10, 12-hour drive down there, we just talked and talked and talked and fleshed out the idea for the script and sort of did the whole, what would normally be 4 weeks of writing and 3 weeks of pre-production in about 10 hours. in the drive down there. And then we hit the ground in Mexico and just started shooting. Julio's from Mexico, so his family was all there, which made it incredibly easy for us because his family just was able to help us make our way around the town and get us into buildings to film and all sorts of stuff, find us actors that we needed. All the Latino actors from Mexico were all non-actors, but they put in brilliant performances. And so we created this sort of way of working where we'd improv a scene over and over and over again until we got the dialogue down, and then we'd shoot it. And sometimes we'd improv the scene at night after a day of shooting and shoot it the next day and then take a lunch break and improv another scene and shoot it. And we did that for about 10 days and then came back to Texas. And we went back one other time for a couple more days to film some more stuff. But at the end of it all, Matt Tompkins grabbed the whole film. He was the only one who was going to be able to finish it. And he sat with it for a year and edited it and made it his own. And it was an incredible film when we finally saw it. And it went to Houston World Fest and won first place in the drama category. And it's been going ever since.
So what is it about, actually? I've seen the trailer, but I can't remember much from it, unfortunately.
It's about a girl who gets kidnapped. In that border area, these young ladies were being kidnapped and murdered, I think thousands of them, by, you know, over a period of like 10 years. And so we did kind of a microcosmic story about one of them who gets abducted. And my character is he's actually Scottish, so he speaks with a Scottish dialect, but he's a Scottish con man, and his connection to the story is that well, you find out in the film, but, you know, he's a bad guy. But he has a choice.
So, when might we be able to see this movie in wide theatrical distribution?
It's going to be a slim theatrical distribution. It's like one of those little independent films that you see. It's only on one screen in one theater in the entire city. And I know it's opening in the Midwest in May sometime. They haven't locked down all the theaters, but as soon as they do, I will be sure to update you.
Absolutely. This definitely sounds like something I would like to review on This Week in Geek. Now, will there be any showings in Canada, perchance?
Canada? Actually, you know what? Just recently we talked with this distributor about the next film we're doing, and he said he does have connections in Canada and that he would be able to get us distribution in Canada for our next film. I'm not sure what that means for Fragility. I'm not sure. I honestly don't understand how they plan out and decide where each film is going to go, so I don't know if it's decided beforehand and you can't change it. But it may be. Who knows? We'll see if it does well enough, if all of you who listen to This Week in Geek go see it. Well, maybe it'll take over the world.
Well, guys, you definitely heard it from the man himself. Go and check that out. So I guess, Chuck, in the closing moments of this interview, what is next for you? Basically, what projects are you currently working on, and what things do you wish for our fans to acknowledge and check out right now?
Right now, in the world of video games, I did several voices on a certain Ghostbusters video game for the new Ghostbusters game, which I have to tell you, when you get to do the game, you get to see some of the game, and it looks fabulous. So there's a section of the game where there's an answering machine, and I play several funny voices on that answering machine. So if you pick up the Ghostbusters game, that's me doing most of the voices on the answering machine. And then, of course, Fragility of Seconds, hopefully opening in May, everywhere. And then several different animes. I'm trying to think of the ones that I can actually talk about. One huge one that everyone will know that I'm not allowed to talk about yet, but I gave you a hint, Amphibian. Amphibian. The password is Amphibian. And then I just did a character on Big Wind Up, which I hope I can say. And then there's a good possibility of a third season of Shin Chan, which will be starting up in a couple of months. So keep your fingers crossed for that.
Well, awesome. Well, definitely, Chuck, want to thank you for your time today. And as I often ask a lot of the voice actors that we interview here on This Week in Geek, and specifically This Week in Geek fan service, what advice do you give to anybody who wants to maybe break into this business? Basically, what are some tips and tricks you might be able to share?
Well, the first thing is that if you really want to be an actor, you have to be an actor in all fields. It's very difficult to narrow yourself to just one field, because you have to be able to act in theater, industrial, film, television, voiceovers, because if you want to make money, you just need to take it wherever you can get it. But aside from that, I would say study acting in college. And if you're not going to college, or if you're already out of college, find out where the auditions are. Make sure you're in a market where you can audition a lot. If you're going to be an actor, it's probably not good to live somewhere deep in the wilds of Montana. You probably want to be in either New York, L.A., Chicago, or DFW. And then just audition and keep auditioning and do theater, because you'll meet other actors. I got the Funimation gig because I was doing theater. And a guy, Brad Jackson, had gotten the Funimation gig, and he said, hey, you should go over and audition here. Here's the number. I'll tell him that you're going to come audition. So network yourself by doing theater. It's a great way to do it.
Awesome stuff. So, Chuck, if people wanted to get in touch with you or check out some of your work, where would they go to do so?
I am on MySpace and Facebook, both of them, Chuck Huber. And then there's chucksdonuts.com, which is my fan site, which has a bunch of stuff on it, forums and whatnot, news. And Fragility of Seconds, if you go to fragilitythemovie.com, you can see all sorts of stills and director's notes and whatnot.
All right, cool then, Chuck. Well, once again, I want to thank you for being a part of This Week in Geek's interview series on This Week in Geek fan service. So, guys, you just heard it from the man himself, Chuck Huber. If you're not out there checking out The Fragility of Seconds, I will find you. Anyway, guys, so for This Week in Geek, I've been Mike the Birdman Dodd saying live free or die hard, and I'll be back next week right here on thisweekingeek.net. And don't forget to check me out on 1150 AM WIMA on the Mike Miller Morning Show. All right, guys, I'll talk to you soon, and as always, take care.
Want to see me make bubbles with my spit?
Sure do. In fact, that's the theme of our next show.
So don't miss it.
What the hell happened to George Lucas?
Remember, kids, buy pizza, pay with steak.
What's your social media business card? My fist.
Just give me a big box of beef.
Don't give them ideas.
Don't forget our other twig project, GeorgeLucasHasLostHisMind.com.
Does Jesus have Matrix powers?
I think the Pillsbury Doughboy's albino.
I'd like to see a cat on Tourette's.
It's the moment I give up on life. Because then I don't know what to believe in anymore. When the Amish start twittering, I'm done.
Can we leave this subject alone?
Hello.
I can feel it coming in the air tonight. Oh no.
Hi, Chris. How are you?
I'm confused. As you can imagine, they don't let us out much.
You've been listening to This Week in Geek. Tune in next week to hear Kyle Hebert say...
Today, the world. Tomorrow, the universe. Next week, my chiropractor. Oy, my back.
Check out our website, thisweekingeek.net, for more geek content, as well as subscribe to our podcast through iTunes or any podcatcher. If you'd like to comment about this episode, head to this episode post on thisweekingeek.net and comment through Facebook Connect. Or you can also call our voicemail line at 817-717-7202 or email us at feedback@thisweekingeek.net. This extra music was produced by perpetualemotionmachine.ca. We'll see you next time, and remember,
lower your shields and surrender your listenership.
Let's say you just bought a house. Bad news is, you're one step closer to becoming your parents. You'll proudly mow the lawn, ask if anybody noticed you mowed the lawn, tell people to stay off the lawn, compare it to your neighbor's lawn, and complain about having to mow the lawn again. Good news is, it's easy to bundle home and auto through Progressive and save on your car insurance, which, of course, will go right into the lawn. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company, affiliates, and other insurers. Discount not available in all states or situations.
You shouldn't go to Barnes & Noble and buy 10,000 books just so you can build a book fortress and yell out, "I am your book leader." You shouldn't buy 147 copies of War and Peace, stuff them inside turkeys, and serve them at Thanksgiving as turbookins. And you definitely shouldn't buy up all the copies of Dork Diaries, causing the neighborhood kids to stage a protest in your front yard. But you could, because at the Barnes & Noble Book Hall, you can get over 1,000 titles for 50% off. Stock up at your local Barnes & Noble. Turbookins are fictitious and should not be cooked at home.